What you're seeing now is that the strains of the German, French, British new Cold War militarism is breaking up the European community. And one of the reasons is, well, when you mention Miss Callas and her friend von der Leyen, you see, how is it that the EU leadership can be so pro-war, whereas the voters of Europe, especially in Germany, but throughout Europe, don't want war? How is it that the EU bureaucracy is able to put in warmongers who have almost a traumatic hatred of Russia, an emotional hate, wanting to go to war with them, that is not shared by the voters and the population at large? Well, the result is, I think that at some point, you're already having Hungary, the Czechs, even questions by Maloney and many Frenchmen, do we really want to be a part of this? How can we, is it possible that we can remain in the whole political way in which the European community has been structured, whereas somehow unelected war hawks like Callas and von der Leyen are in charge of European foreign policy, and they've put all of their fellow neocons and neoliberals along with them in the European community, the EU leadership is as if the EU leadership is opposed to the individual countries. How long can Europe really stay together without countries beginning to withdraw? Already, Hungary has said, well, we're going to veto these levies on us to try to fight Russia. We don't want to fight Russia. We want gas from Russia. We want the way it used to be before 2022. Other countries are saying the same thing. So this what you've described is actually splitting up Europe, and it looks like the only way that Europe can escape from this false narrative and this false economics is by somehow breaking it up and starting all over again with a new structure. And you look at how did all this come to be in the first place? Well, it was largely U.S. influence, the way that Europe shaped the United States pressed a design of Europe, not only the Eurozone with its monetary rules, following University of Chicago, sort of right-wing economics, but the whole politics way going back to Operation Gladio in Italy and other countries. The United States has been sponsoring through the non-governmental organizations all sort of the political leadership of Europe today. That is how people like Baerbock and the Greens somehow got promoted. People that you think, how can these people ever have sort of risen and gotten so many credentials? And well, a lot of that's by U.S. maneuvering to do to Europe what it did with putting Tony Blair in, for instance, in England. The idea is to make all of to find Tony Blairs for Germany, France, Italy, and other countries who will sort of be very loyal to the US policy and to the Cold War. And that loyalty to the US is what's splitting up Europe today. Well, you've seen the European politicians to say, no, we're breaking away from the United States. The United States wants peace and peace with, or at least Trump wants peace with, Putin, but we certainly don't. And we're not going to spend this 5% of our GDP on military arms on buying American arms, as Donald Trump had hoped. We're going to spend it on buying German arms or so. And there's a kind of an attempt to use this anti-Americanism to sort of reinforce What they think is a way of solidifying the European countries, but it's not re-solidifying it. And especially as the economic situation gets worse and worse, as Germany reindustrializes and loses its heavy industry, its fertilizer industry, all the industries that were dependent on imports of raw materials from Russia, and as Europe agrees with the United States to cut itself off from China and trade with China. It's not exactly in its own self-interest, but it's in the idea of its self-interest based on this kind of false narrative. It's a false economic narrative, as well as a false political narrative. And that's the problem. And given the role of the mass media in Germany and other countries, you're not really getting much of the other side of the issue. And you've just seen in Germany trying to talk, well, let's ban the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, just like other countries, just like Romania is trying to ban the anti-war candidates. You're having a suspension of liberty, and you're also having Germany ban advocates of peace in Gaza, defenders of Gaza, or just Germans who say, we don't want genocide, we want peace. All of this is being banned, and visitors who are coming to give speeches or discussion of the war in Gaza are turned away. You're having this antithesis of everything that the cover story of the European Union of prosperity and democracy was supposed to promote. A war for a state is not a state, as the name implies, that is going to provide welfare for the population at large. So, what are they going to vote for? Are they going to vote for their self-interest, which is better living standards? Or are they going to say, well, okay, we're going to pay higher prices for the gas and for electricity and for heating our homes? We're going to have much lower living standards, but it's all worth it, really, just to fight Russia. Well, you're going to have a conflict between the narrative of we need war in order to save the world, and the reality of well, somebody's going to make a big sacrifice, and also the reality of other countries' response, especially of France is the danger, and England are the dangerous triggers here. President Putin has said, all right, they're going to be more active in providing Ukraine with missiles, long-distance missiles that can hit Russian territory. And I think a month ago, Putin came out and said, we're not going to pretend that all this fighting in Ukraine is about Ukraine. It's really about NATO, and behind NATO, the United States wanting to break up Europe and divide Europe. And since we know that the fight's NATO and in Europe, that it's led by Macron in France and now Starmer in Britain, if a missile made by France or England hits Russia, we're going to respond not against Ukrainian territory that launched it, but against the country that made the missile. We're going to respond against Britain. Will it be London? Will it be some British manufacturing territory? Will it be Paris or one of the Parisian military production plants? So there's a possibility of a Russian response that realizes this is just a charade to pretend that all of this fighting is in Ukraine. That's the point that Putin and Lavrov have been making in their discussions with the Americans. They're saying, look, forget Ukraine. We really would be better off not even discussing it right now. Let's talk about the whole roots of the Cold War. Let's talk about the fact that when the Soviet Union broke up in 1991, NATO should have been dismantled also. That's when Putin said maybe, and the Russians said maybe we should join NATO and all be together. They want to go back to try to undo this whole salami carving up Russia bit by bit and deal with the underlying economic structure. That's what the European governments are against. And if they're against going back and destructuring the whole Cold War apparatus, economic apparatus and political apparatus that's been put in place since 1991, this cannot be done smoothly. It's got to, there has to be some sort of trigger of consciousness. There has to be a critical mass of the population realizing what the problem is. Well, you're seeing this to some extent in Germany, but they're really, from my point of view, the only party that has a reality-based economics is this Sarah Wagenknecht, group, and she hardly got to the 5% cutoff point where to get into into the government. So it's like Europe is in a pre-collapse situation, a pre-crisis situation. But there's in the end, you cannot keep a false narrative going when reality becomes stronger and stronger, and the gap between the reality and the narrative becomes so strained that finally people realize that doesn't work. Well, what you need is an alternative to be put forth. And there are political alternatives. Yes, let's not fight with Russia. But there hasn't been an economic alternative to how are we, if we don't fight with Russia, then how are we going to reestablish prosperity in Germany and in the other European countries, if it's not by producing more military goods? How are we going to restructure the economy in a better way than the way in which the Eurozone was set up originally? Without an economic discussion of that kind of alternative, you're seeing Germany and Europe just go into a blind alley that is getting tighter and tighter, and at some point just has to explode. I mean, the real question is, does Europe really have to go to war to be able to spend money creation into the economy, to employ labor and somehow reindustrialize? And how can it even reindustrialize and make arms without getting gas and energy and oil and other raw materials from Russia, and without trading with China? How can it reindustrialize in the world if it's cutting itself off from the rest of the world that's growing so much more rapidly? And even from the United States, how can it go it alone when it's already deindustrialized so much, when it's already cut off its what would seem to be all of its natural potential sources of strength that it's now lost? There's no realistic way of explaining it except that they have a set of false assumptions and false ideas of how an economy or even a society works. We're in a pre-collapse situation. Before you have a collapse, there's going to be a slow crash. It's going to be the current trend is going to mean that living standards and industrial profits and employment is getting slowly worse and worse and worse. And there can't be a crash until you have a revolutionary situation. And a revolutionary situation is you have an alternative. And without an alternative, there's not a crash. There's just a slow crash, a slow tightening, slowly going down as the economy deteriorates. And you mentioned at the beginning of what you just said, Europe wants to get tough with China. You can't get tough with China. You can't threaten China or Russia because there's nothing that China or Russia needs in Europe. That's what really is so shocking to the European mentality, that the world can get along without Europe at all. Putin and Lavrov said, we'd hoped to have a symbiotic relationship with European industry, technology, and our complementary economies, but we realize that isn't work. So we've reshifted our focus eastward to Eurasia and to the BRICS, and we realize now that we don't need Europe anymore. Now that Europe has lost the industrial appeal that it had before Nord Stream in 2022, there's really nothing that it has to offer. And we certainly don't want to take it over because it would be an albatross for whoever takes Europe as a protectorate under its wings. We don't want that. Now, it's very hard, I think, for Europeans to realize that they're not needed anymore, that they've lost their place in the world. I think most politicians in every country try to do what Trump has said, make America great again. In Europe, they'll say, well, make Europe great again, or Europe is great, or let's recover our greatness. But they've taken steps that seem so irreversible that they can't do anything. And what they've created is I won't say a counter narrative on the part of Russia and China, because narratives are usually artificial false views of the world, but a counter reality. And I think that last week, Foreign Minister Lavrov said, here is how Russia and our allies are viewing Europe. It's a brief quote. What he said was, over the past 500 years, when the West was more or less formed in the form in which it has survived to this day, all the tragedies of the world originated in Europe or happened thanks to European politics, colonialism, wars, crusaders, the Crimean War, Napoleon, the First World War, Adolf Hitler, all of that came from Europe. Well, President Putin, in his way, have said, well, all this goes really back to the 11th century when the Great Schism in the Roman Church broke from the Eastern Orthodox Church in Constantinople. And the Romans said, we have to take over Christianity. We have to create a united Europe under the control of Rome. And so the first thing they did in the after about 1051 or so, when they had the Great Schism, was they began to say, how are we going to defeat and destroy Turkey, Constantinople, and by extension, all the areas that the Orthodox Church controlled? Well, the answer was they hired Norman warlords in Europe and said, the first warlord they hired was in the 1070s. And when they went to one of them and said, well, we'll give you southern Italy and Sicily, which right now is a Byzantine area. If you get rid of the Byzantines and make that Catholic, we'll bless you as the king. They then went to William, the conqueror of England, and said, well, if you conquer England, right now it's not really paying us very much money. We will bless you as the king of England if you pledge fealty to Rome. And the whole Crusades was really a crusade to destroy the Greek Orthodox Church in Spain, in southern Italy, in the Balkan area, in every area. They would the Romans Church had warlords taking over, and in order to finance it, their military spending, the church abolished its opposition to usury. It created international banking to finance war lending. And you can see how this whole attempt to integrate Europe from the very beginning was is an alternative to what was the economic center of the day, the prosperous center, which was Constantinople, and its prosperity that was spreading further eastward. Well, in that sense, the Russians are looking at Europe and saying, well, we thought that there could be peace, but there's not only this underlying religious difference, which to Putin seems to be very important, but there's also a cultural difference that we are very much like China. We're trying to achieve alliance of other countries by mutual gain, win-win situation. What can we offer you in exchange for your integrating your economy and politics, and hence your political and military alignment with us? The Western way, as you see with Donald Trump, is exactly the opposite. Trump, and I think Trump is providing a model that I'm afraid Europe is taking. Trump is sort of saying, we're going to impose tariffs and sanctions on every other country of the world, awful sanctions to every country. We're saying we can destroy your economy. And the other countries, Mexico and France and Canada, for starters, are saying, well, don't do that. And Trump then will say, okay, if we don't destroy you, what are you going to do that benefits us? He's done the same to law firms in the United States, the same to universities. We're going to pull out all of your spending, and if you don't follow a Zionist policy for us. And they'll say, well, what do we have to do to get the funding back so that we can do research and development? And Trump is laying down the neocon policies they have to take. And Columbia University has led the surrender. I think this is how this is the mentality that Europe is trying to emulate, but it doesn't have anything to threaten other countries with. It can't threaten them with sanctions because other countries can say, okay, don't trade with us. We don't need you. We're self-sufficient by ourselves. The whole rest of the world is trying to be self-sufficient, and almost every region is trying to be self-sufficient, so it's not dependent on other countries, so that it can follow its own self-interest. But Europe has destroyed its own self-sufficiency by Nord Stream and by the sanctions against Russia, by seizing Russia's $300 billion that it had in Belgium and the Euroclear. It's isolated itself from the rest of the world. How on earth can it have anything to gain militarily or politically, even if it were military successful? What can it gain from the rest of the world by isolating itself when the whole rest of the world has divided into new regional geographic groupings? It's as if it's left Western Eurasia, Europe, is a kind of abandoned area. I won't say it's a rust belt like the United States abandoned industrial cities, but it's more than that. It's what it is thought of is its national identity, its historical understanding, its idea that it is a political, moral, intellectual leadership of the world has become a fantasy. How do you ever undergo the psychological healing of that kind of self-inflicted wound that has been sweeping Europe like a disease over the last few years?